Our two guests today are... No, stop. This episode needs a different intro because before we recorded it, we went through a special experience together with our guests. We experienced a breathwork session that left a lasting impression on both of us. Now, if you're rolling your eyes and thinking, what the heck is this doing on a Future of Work podcast? Please give it a try. You will experience an entrepreneur and investor who slipped into a deep mental crisis despite his great success. You will also experience another person for whom one label is not enough. Facilitator, mentor, artist, singer-songwriter, and breathworker. Together they have founded a company that aims to use breathing to make us healthier and happier. For over 6 years, we have been exploring how work strengthens people instead of weakening them. In almost 400 episodes, we have talked to interesting and interested people about what has changed for them when it comes to work and what needs to change further. We are quite sure that it is important to talk about new work right now, because this idea was developed during a real crisis. New work starts with each and every one of us, and the issue of health is part of it. So what can we do to turn the ever-increasing pressure into positive energy? And what role does breathing play in this? We're looking for methods, role models, experiences, tools and ideas that bring us closer to the core of new work. In addition, from the very beginning, we have been concerned with the question of whether all people can find and live what they really, really want in their innermost being. You are with On the Way to New Work today with Björn Koyne and Pete Byrne.
We usually end with the words welcome. You are at On the Way to New Work. And I have to set the scene today. I'm still a bit confused. No, that's not the right word. It's what we did right now, and this is how we came together, is a kind of special episode. We're sitting here together, four of us. It's Pete, it's Björn, it's Michael, it's Christoph. And I put it exactly in that way because we kind of not know each other quite that good for what we just did. For the last hour before we started with the podcast, we did, Pete, what's the right word?
Conscious connected breathwork.
Conscious connected breathwork. And if you now sit in the car and think like, okay, is this like the Wim Hof episode where I should stop the car and start breathing? You have to lay down for that anyways. So don't worry about it. Just listen closely. We are on the other side of the spectrum of breath work. And I have to say, I'm still a bit fuzzy about what I just experienced from my meditation experience and from everything I did. This is definitely on the top experiences I had so far. I had a very, very intense experience. I have a hard time crying usually, very hard time, but it just went through just now. So I feel very good. And I'm very thankful that you guys are here. Yeah. And that we can now even talk about what we just experienced. So this, to set the scene and how this all started, even Michael doesn't know exactly because I gave him a call and said, like, I met Björn, and he's like, who's Björn? I was like, he's a friend, and all, he was also a client. And then we kind of stayed connected all the distance, and Björn introduced us to Pete, and you guys have a company together. So this is how we ended up here.
Yeah, and but we try to come back to our system, to our proved concept and the starting question. How did you become the person you are today, Björn? Maybe you start and then we hand over to Pete, and then we combine your two stories to your to the latest episode, and then we bring our experiences into the discussion. Okay, Björn?
Yeah, happy to do that. How did I become the person I am today? I mean, first of all, I'd say it's like, you're asking that question at a point in time where there's like tons of changes happening in my life. Especially the past year has been quite intense. Yeah, where should I start? I mean, maybe what's interesting to know, I've been, let's say, an entrepreneur for many, many years. basically after I left school, I was thinking, okay, that's where I want to be. So then went to business school, was trying to kind of, you know, study and learning. And then something inside myself was saying, yeah, you know, this entrepreneur kind of path may be nice, but if you become consultant or investment banker, you're going to make money much faster. So that's why I tried to do that and then quickly learned, okay, no, that's simply doesn't work for me. Business school is not my world. Learning stuff by heart than just repeating on paper, not my world, doesn't work. So after 1.5 years, I left. I went to Berlin. Business school was back in Frankfurt, where I was also born and raised. So went to Berlin and started building companies. And I always had that dream that if I only manage to build a successful company and then at some point exit it, then I will finally be free. Like my idea was to achieve freedom through having lots of money. And that was my, let's say, main motivation already back then. I was maybe not as aware of that as I am today. But clearly that was what was driving, the driving force behind all my entrepreneurial kind of projects. And then I started building a company within the health tech space. We were launching a platform through which we are doing the appointment scheduling between doctors and patients online. And that's also where I met Christoph the first time. We had some difficulties with sales and customer service, and also I had some, let's say, personal negotiation challenges, and then Christoph started to help us with that. Yeah, I built that company for 6 years. Wasn't like a big success, but at least most of the people got some money back afterwards. And then went into my next venture, which is a e-commerce brand builder. So we are looking at social media trends and then seeing, okay, like what type of products can we position in what way to sell them well. And that business, that company is called Invincible Brands. I've built that from 2016 until end of 2022, together with some co-founders of mine. And that one went pretty well. We went from 0 to 100 million of sales within only, I think it was 4 years, something like that. And at the very peak, we had like 300 employees. Also given my intention, and like it wasn't only my intention, like also a shared intention among all of us shareholders, to also make some money, we sold the company twice. Very, very soon after launch, we sold it to private equity and later on then to strategic. And that was, let's say, an entrepreneurial story. And then, I stayed with the company later as CEO for many years. And then most recently, when also, let's say, the market environment of a, let's say, D2C changed significantly and things became way more difficult, I also after the exit, came back, took CEO role again and tried to, find, let's say, a good way forward together with the new owner. And before I go to that, it's another piece in my life that has been really important that I need to mention before that will make more sense and for stuff going forward. I was really focused on my business and driving that and making that big. And probably the rest of the time that was still left, I spent with my wife. And we have a very special story because, like, since the beginning when we were together, she had like an terminal disease. It's basically like an something in the heart lung system that is not working properly and is causing a hypertension in the lung, which then in the long run leads to a heart failure, basically, because the heart needs to pump very hard to keep the system going. And that was, apart from making money and building the business, I was constantly worried about, okay, how is she doing? Like, how is the DC progressing? And for many, many years, it was just fine. It was kind of flat. It was there, but it wasn't, really like progressing or changing. So, we also managed to, let's say, ignore it. But then end of 16, 17, and then especially in the past, let's say 2 years, 21, 22, well, let's say 20, starting with 20, then 21, it started really like becoming worse and the symptoms becoming more visible. And that like almost led to her having like a, having to receive a new lung. And that was just something that was also very present all the time. Apart from us having a great time and, building a great company and enjoying that, to a certain extent, that thing was constantly there. So coming back to the question, while I was building the company and everything, and given that, let's say, very strong focus on success and money, I, in the process of building that, really gave up on myself. And I did not build the business in a very authentic way. And I did not ask, let's say, for what I really need. I did not set any boundaries. I was working like 24/7. If you were an investor into my business, you can call me 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 7 a.m. in the morning, doesn't matter. I'll be available. And that was just, at some point, way too much stress. Like, and I thought, just, this is, you know, the way things have to be. Like, if I'm running a business, then I need to be on 24/7. I need to push all the time. And I was living off the belief that only if I show up in a certain way in my company, if I wear a certain mask, I will actually be accepted by my employees, by my, like, investors, and by everyone else, partners, and so on, right? I was running a very difficult combination of not being authentic, not setting any boundaries, not clearly asking for what I need and, like, what my individual needs are, and not showing up who, like, in the way I truly felt and truly the person that I felt that I am to, you know, maintain that business that I so badly needed in order to make the money that I really wanted to, in the end, be free. Because that was originally why I went on that journey, was make a lot of money to be free from the system and can do whatever I want. And at some point, this was simply too much for me to handle. So I, like, started tapping into behavior that is not only not healthy for me, it's also causing hurt to other people, especially the one that I love the most, which is my wife. And so I started, like, it all started with, like, let's say, heavy, very regular usage of pornography, that at some point, you know, I was using other stuff, webcams and so on. And then eventually led to me cheating on my wife, then for, you know, multiple times over several years. And also, I caught myself, like, not only using, like, cocaine or stuff for, let's say, in a party or something where, you know, things happen, but also caught myself thinking about it on a daily basis, basically thinking, after going in that situation, it could actually feel much better if I could have a line or something like that. And what else was there? Apart from that, I also, like, at some point in my life, I had, like, while I was building the business, like, 30 kilos overweight and wasn't really looking great. So I said, hey, okay, I want to change that. And started, like, really working out and changing my diet and everything. And that was great. And, like, it put me into a better position, like, mentally, physically. And at the same time, I was doing that with the same energy. I was acting from a lack of, okay, I'm not enough. Like, now I have the money, I have the business. I'm not enough. I need to have a different body now. So I went in with the same energy and, like, starting to change my body. And while that was very helpful and, put me health-wise in a much better position.
It was not an authentic driver behind.
Yeah, I mean, part of me wants to be healthy and fit and good in shape. But
you were doing this for others.
Yeah. I was doing that partly for others. And also I was doing it once again in a very extreme way, you know. I wasn't able to go to the gym like 2 times a week and change my diet. Like, it was a radical kind of shift once again in my life. And at some point that was, like, with all the things going on, like, I felt like shit, right? Cheating on my wife, that was super sick, but, you know, that stress needed to go somewhere. And also I was completely unable to deal with her situation. Like, obviously I supported her, I took care of everything. Like, on the outside, someone would say, hey, you know, this guy takes care of his wife, makes a lot of money, goes to workout, goes to gym, like, life seems under control, it seems pretty good, right? But in the inside, I felt, like, unauthentic, unfulfilled. I had days where, like, I feel deeply depressed and, like, didn't even want to get up and do something. And I felt like this doesn't make any sense. And, like, there were days where I thought, okay, if that's the last day of my life, okay, that's fine. I don't need another day of that, basically. And at some point, I felt like, okay, this can't go on, you know, something really needs to change. And that was the day when I reached out to Pete and we started working together. And yeah, that's how we met. And just to finish the question, if you still have time.
I have all the time of the world.
to kind of complete the picture of who I was or who I am. Let's say I always had a feeling of, okay, everything I'm doing is, you know, it seems to work out, but I'm missing something. I always was open to, let's call it for now, spiritual topics in a certain way. Okay? Mm-hmm. I still remember many situations where, I know, everything was happening in the way I wanted it on the outside, and still I felt like that can't be it. There is something else. So I always felt kind of a little pull from, let's say, the spiritual, the mystical, or whatever you want to call that. So it happened that end of 2019, my wife decided to go to a workshop of Dr. Joe Dispenza, who's like a meditation
trainer. I was there as well.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So we went there because like Western medicine didn't have any answers for her, and her DC was kind of progressing. She needed to find something else. She went there and said, hey, I'm going to come with you. And then I arrived there, I was thinking, oh, what the fuck, like all these people here, like, you know, esoteric.
Did you take the week or the 3?
The week long, okay. Advanced. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Was my entry was a week long advanced. It's like, you know, never meditated in my life before arriving there.
And kind of extreme again.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of my thing, like go all in and be extreme, right? So I arrived there, I was like, what the fuck, you know, all these people, that's not my world. And then day 2 or day 3, I don't remember exactly. I was like, okay, fuck it, I just try and see what happens. They have nothing to lose. So I went into the meditation and something happened. I tapped into what I would today call like universal love and just an immense feeling of freedom and connection. And from there, I knew that, let's say, alternative tools, practices, and a different belief system has to become part of my life. And actually already at that point in time, I was able to change quite some of my behavior. It lasted for, I'd say, 1.5 years-ish. Because then what happened was that the health conditions of my wife got way worse and got really, really, let's say, dangerous and really concerning. And it was interesting because I never processed any sadness or fear or whatever around that. I was always like flat and supporting and doing the things, but I was completely unable to sit with the fact that she might die and how upset and sad I would be about that. And even going there caused so much stress for me that I went back to old behavior. Mm. Cheated again on her, all the other things that are hurtful and ultimately not healthy, but, you know, it was simply too much. But from that point on, from this Joe Dispenza experience, I had a strong interest in these, let's say, alternative tools, so to say. That's why I also, first time in my life, I tried breathwork when we were in Bali, end of 2021. From there, I, let's say, knew the method and knew that's helpful to me. And then, last summer, last year, started working together with Pete. And since then, I'm, let's say, on a journey where, first of all, after some breakthroughs in the breathwork journeys, I completely stopped these old unhealthy behaviors. Since then, haven't touched any of that. I told my wife the truth. So that's part of the reason why we're also, you know, breaking up right now, which is very sad. And at the same time, I'm immensely grateful that she kind of, in a certain way, how our dynamic was also brought me to these tools that are now having such a significant impact on my life. And I am, doing things in a very different and new way. Like when I'm doing business, I'm like very clearly setting boundaries for what I'm available, for what I'm not available. I am clearly asking for like what I need and then, you know, making sure that people know that. And then I can either help me to achieve that or if they don't, that's also fine. But like, at least I have made very clear what I need. I have made clear for what I'm available, for what I'm not available. Choosing relationships, also in business where I can share openly and express myself fully and not having to like hold back anything. And even like bringing these new tools like breathwork and coaching into businesses that I'm, let's say, creating and financing today. So any founder I'm working with nowadays either is being coached or going through breathwork or both of that. And I'm not doing significant investments without that component being there. And yeah, in general, I am living way less. And obviously, it's a process, right? But I'm living way less from a process, from a place of lack and fear of not having enough and being unfree and stuff, more from a place
and of being not good enough.
Being not good enough. Oh, yeah, big thing, right? I'm not good enough, so I need to wear a mask and add something. I need to add money. I need to add a certain way how I look by, you know, doing this, that, and the other. And then I am someone, I am finally accepted and being loved by everyone. And I can see how I'm, you know, acting less and less from that place and more acting from a place of fullness. And then choosing an activity that brings me joy. Like even in business, like what type of people, what type of projects do bring me joy? Who do I want to be with and spend my time with? And then using that as a basis for making decisions. And yeah, that's a pretty big thing. And yeah, I think there's more that will probably come to my mind during the podcast. But for now, I'd say that's like in a nutshell who I am today.
I need to breathe very deeply. And before I breathe very deeply, I want to thank you for sharing this with us. This is not something
you're welcome.
I expected, and I'm very, very thankful for it. Thank you.
Und hier kommt die ganz kurze Werbeunterbrechung. Es geht um das Thema künstliche Intelligenz, spezifisch um die Frage, welche Art von KI sollen wir eigentlich im Unternehmen einsetzen? Wie können wir Mitarbeitende darauf schulen? Was sind geeignete Use Cases und Anwendungen? Es sind ja wirklich viele Dinge momentan unterwegs, wie Copilot von Microsoft oder Duett von Google. Aber auch die Frage, wie kann man die eigenen Daten mit einer KI verbinden über sogenannte Agents, die dann vielleicht zusammenarbeiten und dabei helfen, Customer Support Fälle schneller zu lösen, Mitarbeitenden helfen, als so eine Art Onboarding-Bot die Ramp-Up-Phase in Unternehmen zu verkürzen. Es gibt aber auch interne Bots, die Fragen beantworten und. Es gibt wahnsinnig viele Fragezeichen zum Thema, wie gehen wir eigentlich richtig mit generativer KI um? Wir haben dazu bei Blackboard ein Team aufgestellt, schon vor einigen Monaten, haben uns vor vielen Jahren beteiligt an einem Unternehmen namens Merantix, und Merantix Momentum und Blackboard zusammen führen am 21. November in Berlin den Generative AI Day durch. Dort bekommt ihr die geballte Kompetenz genau zu dem Thema und genau zu der Frage an einem Tag im kompletten Überblick. Ihr findet alle Informationen, wenn ihr über den Link geht, unter der Domain aiday.blackboard.com, und da findet ihr alle weiteren Informationen. Wenn ihr Fragen habt, schreibt einfach. Auf blackboard.com findet ihr den Zugang über WhatsApp direkt zu uns ins Team, aber auch unseren Bot, mit dem ihr sprechen könnt, der die Fragen beantworten kann. Einfach fragen, dann seht ihr, was man zum Beispiel mit AI-Bots bauen kann. Und jetzt wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit dem Rest der Folge und freue mich auf euch in Berlin am 21. November auf dem AI-Campus.
Yeah, it's this was kind of deep reconnection Björn and I had. We were sitting together. I had my kids at the office in Berlin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, let's talk. And we went right away into that deep talk from both sides. So thank you for sharing that here. And we now need the connection moment from you to Pete so that Pete can share with us how did you become the person that you are today.
Do we want to connect or do we want to go straight into this?
Let's say, you said you called Pete, right, for help. That's basically it at a certain moment.
But we can use the time machine, and Pete is just telling this story.
Exactly.
How did he become the person?
Did you become the person up until the day Björn called?
Yeah. Great. Okay. Love that. First, before I dive in, I want to thank you guys and also the audience for tolerating English today, because I'm sure it would be in German otherwise. So it's great to be able to have this conversation. So thanks for having me, and also obviously for us being here. How did I become the person I am today? So a couple of key moments, I'd say. I would say one of the roles I play in the world is a musician and an artist. So I've kind of always been into music, writing songs since I was very young, playing guitar, teaching myself drums, guitar, singing in the choir and then in school, and going through various ups and downs with playing in bands and getting turned away from a school musical and then joining another school musical and like just always having that passion for music. And that led me to when I finished, I studied economics and psychology, and I was always quite interested in the mind and why humans are the way we are. And both my parents are life coaches as well. So that kind of, it's around the house, you know? So at a certain point I, you know, started to explore deeper into that. And simultaneously I saw music becoming a tool that I could use as a way to travel. So after university, I got my first job. I was working as a waiter, and then I started playing concerts in that same restaurant as a singer, and I was getting paid 3 times more to do music. I'm like, okay, well, I'm never going back to that other stuff. So it was just music from that point. So at 22, I was offered a job to go play in Irish bars in Paris. So I moved to Paris for 8 months. I went to the Greek islands, traveled, kind of going between the summers in Greece and the winters in the Austrian Alps, doing seasonal work. And then between Thailand, Australia, South America, Scandinavia, and just basically me and my guitar traveling, bringing in musicians and really getting to live a really nice life for basically most of my 20s. And with that nice life was a real sense of getting to kind of to speak to what Bjorn was saying about like on the outside having this perfect life. And in many ways, I got so much joy from those years. At the same time, I recognized that it was close or getting towards what was the real me, but it wasn't really hitting the nail on the head. There was there's a depth in me that I desire to have in connection with others. And I feel like it was a lot more superficial in those places. At moments there was depth, there'd be connection with local people or maybe an occasional deep conversation. But I felt that a lot of the lack of depth that I received from those places, from the superficiality and the party life, I kind of dove into that world instead and indulged, you know, as a musician playing on stage 5 nights a week, everyone's on holidays or on their Friday night out and they want to party with you. So, you know, after about 4 years of that, my body kind of gave up on me. And one night on stage, basically I had like what I would refer to now as like a nervous system breakdown, basically. Mm-hmm. So my whole body started like shaking and tingling and I like lightheaded and I had to just get off stage and I really wasn't okay for a couple of weeks after that, you know? And I knew I'd done something really serious. And I was like, okay, it was this extreme go, go, go. I can't stop. I need to keep playing. I need to keep going. So, you know, then swung the pendulum completely the opposite way, went raw vegan, you know, fasting on water for 10, 12 days, you know, meditation, yoga, you know, everything on the other end of the spectrum, you know. Mm. I think I lost like 14 or 15 kilograms, you know, like it was a lot, but
it's the extreme episode. Mm. I think we don't give this episode a number. It's the extreme episode. Sorry. Pete, go on.
No, it's good. It's good. You can probably start to see why we came together. So that was in kind of 2017, 18. And I started exploring these different modalities at that point, knowing that, you know, I thought originally it was the diet and that was going to be the thing that fixed me or healed me, this idea of I was broken in some way. And I was doing, you know, sound healing trainings and going to India and doing Reiki trainings and meditation and trying all these different modalities. And really for about 3-4 years, I was still going to these environments. I was still playing, but I'd have my watermelon juice instead of my Red Bull vodka kind of thing. And, you know, I was integrating it into my life and still playing. But I was looking for a thing. I just didn't feel myself and I didn't know why. So what happened was, funny enough, actually, my first like window into this, I think in 2019, was I did actually a Joe Dispenza meditation in a hotel room in Thailand. And I had a real breakthrough moment of like, it wasn't at the 1 week intensive, but it was like in the room and just been like, just having this like physical experience of like a breakthrough. I'm just like, whoa, what's this? You know? And it kind of scared me a bit, but I was like, okay, interesting. But it was only then in the beginning of 2020. So I'd moved to Bali. I'd gotten a visa to play music there. And that was the beginning of COVID. So everything closed down. I had a year's worth of gigs canceled, basically, like weddings and everything that were booked. And I'd been living quite lavishly, like spending money and enjoying myself because I knew I'd have all this work coming in. And then all of a sudden it was stopped. So I was like, okay, well, shit, gonna have to hunker down and, you know, budget and kind of take it easy. And I just planned to stay there for a few months. And my housemate at the time recommended, he's like, I went to see this guy called Edward. He's a breathwork facilitator. And I'd had an astrologer years ago tell me about breathwork. I'm like, oh yeah, whatever, you know. And so it sparked an interest. I said, okay, so I booked in for a session with them like the next day. And I lay down, kind of like you guys did just before, and not expecting much, just lay down. And he guided me into a session for an hour. And I got up from it and I just said, I don't know what that was, but this is the thing. This is what I've been looking for, you know? And it was like the colors outside were brighter and clearer. And again, at the time, I didn't understand it. Of course, I had 100 questions for him. And he was like, oh, just don't worry about it. Just like, don't let the mind go. You know, let's have the experience and not need to understand everything all the time, which was good medicine. But for me, looking back on that now, it was like I was coming out of a chronic fight or flight state where I was living in this fear-based thing of like originally going with the music, I can't stop. And then it was with the health, I needed to keep going, I can't stop, you know? And so it was finally giving me a window into a different pattern, a different behavior or way of living or being that wasn't on the menu up until that point. Because for many years, I'd just been living in this go, go, go. And it becomes, or it became, I'd say, just the norm, you know? Mm. So we don't know what we don't know kind of thing. So, you know, I was all in at that point. I started going every week to the group events, to breathwork, and doing also one-on-one sessions for about a year and just really going deep into myself and experiencing all these different emotions that started to come up and re-experiencing, like something would happen on a Monday. I'd have an experience and it would remind me of like an old time at school or something that happened with my family. And then on the Wednesday, I'd go to breathwork and it would come up, but I'd get to really like relive it. And I didn't really understand what was happening. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And I feel so much better after it. You know, I feel like light and free, even though it was maybe challenging in the moment. And when I started to like learn more about it, I was like, oh, what's happening is I'm resurfacing incomplete emotions or reflexes in the body that I felt at the time, but I didn't have the capacity or the tools or the space to process. And so it was finally like I could go back to those moments and close the loop and close that tab that had been running in the background, draining the battery. Those triggers or those things that were challenging to me and that were impacting the way I was living on a day-to-day basis. So what I found was as I just kind of rolled in every week and made it my ritual to go every week and just breathe and not have expectations, more and more of these tabs started to close and we started going back a little bit deeper, you know, and back in the archives. And at a certain point, I started to feel like a whole new sense of just clarity and presence and groundedness. And there was one moment where I'd had two specific big journeys where I'd let go of a lot of like very deep emotion, you know? And I met a girl at a cafe that day for the first time. And she looked at me and she said, I have never met a man who's more grounded and present than you. And I'm like, I have never heard that before. No one has ever said that to me before. Like that's, but she was so, there was so much conviction.
I want this.
Yeah, totally. I was like, okay, that's not a coincidence. I've just had two of the biggest journeys ever, like let go of so much of these emotions I was carrying. And then it's been reflected instantly to me. You know what I mean? So yeah, it was kind of the thing of like, I knew I would train almost instantly when I started. I'm like, I'm going to be a practitioner in this. So 1 year I was practicing and then I did the training beginning of 2021. And since then I've been just kind of sharing it, building it up. I was already had a coaching practice at that point. So I've been blending the two where we're working with the mind, obviously, which is important, you know, to understand cognitively things, particularly in, you know, the world we live in. It's like we can talk about only let's be in the body all the time, but we got to be rational. So for me, it was starting to then for myself and also then for others, bridge the gap between the mind and then starting to understand these deeper patterns that are controlling our lives. And how can we become truly free? Like, how can we free ourselves from these deeper voids or drives that are ultimately determining our behavior, that even though we can make the money or have the success or that life, we don't actually have freedom because we're still being governed by our incomplete reflexes that are stored in the body. So yeah, it was at that point that myself and Bjorn connected.
How did you find him, Bjorn? How did you find Pete?
Okay.
Or was it the other way around?
He went to the top of a mountain and went like,
Pete! Is the thing called internet?
Werbung. Dein Cloud-Account wurde deaktiviert. Bitte neu anmelden. So oder so ähnlich könnte eine Mail bei dir im Postfach heißen, aber hinter der Webseite, hinter dem Formular steckt kein Tool, sondern ein Phishing-Angriff. Betrüger kommen so an die sensiblen Daten deiner Company und unser Partner SoSafe hilft dir dabei, um das menschliche Sicherheitsrisiko bei Cyberattacken zu minimieren. In den letzten 3 Jahren hat nämlich jedes zweite Unternehmen einen erfolgreichen Cyberangriff erlebt und Firmen investieren zwar Zeit und Ressourcen in Firewall und Technik, aber 85% aller Datenschutzvorfälle sind tatsächlich auf den Faktor Mensch zurückzuführen. Und SoSafe hilft durch verhaltenswissenschaftlich fundierten E-Learning, Gamification, intelligenten Angriffssimulationen, Risikoanalysen und Auswertungen dabei, eine Human Firewall in deinem Unternehmen aufzubauen. Wenn ihr es testen wollt, auf sosafe.de/omr könnt ihr euch kostenlos für eine eigene, individualisierte Phishing-Simulation anmelden. Also einfach mal testen, wie eure Klickrate im Unternehmen wäre auf solche Mails. Bisherige Unternehmen hatten da zum Beispiel 30%. Ihr könnt gucken, ob euer Unternehmen über- oder unterbietet. Alle Infos auf sosafe.de/omr. Werbung Ende.
Aber you didn't mention that you're from Ireland? No, you didn't.
I didn't, no.
Which part of Ireland?
I'm from Dublin.
From Dublin, yeah. One of the most fascinating cities in Europe. I love Dublin.
For sure.
Love Irish sport like hurling and
Gaelic football.
Gaelic football. Yeah. We can talk later about this.
Sounds good, yeah.
This is also part-time sports podcast.
Okay, cool.
Michael's trying to turn it
alternative sports,
and I try to make it to a tech podcast. So
okay, but
that.
Bjorn, sorry.
Yeah.
I asked you a question and then did a call. Speech.
Yeah, actually, my wife was working with someone from that Breathwork Bali community, and my wife back then was also sensing I could need some help, you know, without even knowing like how big the mess actually was, and asked her for some ideas, and then coach or my wife recommended some guys, and then I reached out to Pete, and that hey, look, this is pretty fucked up. Like he had this questionnaire, like I don't even know what was the question, like the 5 things you would want to change immediately or something like that. I filled that in, like, you know, want to let go of my job, want to stop using porn, want to stop cheating on my wife, and 2 other things, like, you know, I can't even remember what it was.
You think the white powder?
You know, all this, like, you know, getting rid of that and start finally living free, you know, and authentic. And then, yeah, we started working together, and then after, I know, a couple of weeks, we had our first, let's say, more intensive retreat that we did on EOS in Greece, and always like combination of like coaching and breathwork, and with that, you know, I was able to tap into basically everything, like from a deep sense of relaxation. It's basically like how journeys develop, like relaxation and just some insights and some clarity to then at some point into even like childhood stuff, like. If you had asked me, like, I would have always said, yeah, my childhood has been great, like, no issues. Then turns out, like, I've witnessed it a couple of times how my dad hit my mom into her face, for example. And, like, I witnessed that, but it was never, like, no one ever spoke about that with me afterwards. You know, I was just, was left with that by myself. And, for example, and I was able to get back into that, like, relive it and almost, like, express what has not been expressed back then, and like almost feel it, like, and it was interesting how that, for example, was connected to my behavior in the company. For example, I was not able to tolerate or be with any form of anger or aggression. So whenever someone would get angry or really aggressive, then I would have the urge to like leave the room or just become very
flight.
Like exactly not, mm-hmm. And that distance, this was like not appropriate behavior to like always leave the room. Someone gets a little bit angry, like in board meetings this happens, I would just like withdraw from the situation and like not really interfere and let the person do their thing. Now the thing is, as a CEO, I tolerated behavior from people in the business that was simply not great, and that was behavior that I personally would never show towards people I'm working with, and I would not want to have that in my company. And while most people that worked for us would probably say that it was a nice place to be in and so on, there were still, you know, I as a CEO did not, let's say, really set the culture in a way that would really prevent burnout and would prevent, you know, people from treating each other in certain ways that are simply not great for an atmosphere in which people can be relaxed and be themselves and enjoy what they're actually doing. So that's just an example how, like, even this childhood stuff, for example, would then show up in certain behaviors in my company. So childhood stuff and releasing emotions to that. And then at some point, I learned to really, like, surrender to everything that is kind of in my body and wants to be expressed and just let it out in the journeys. Mm-hmm, and, you know, that goes from, like, crying, screaming, behaviors that I would just call, a year ago would have called that super weird, and today for me just feels natural to let go of that, even in front of a group or just with Pete or whatever constellation I'm breathing with people. It's just like, you know, that's for me the ultimate freedom I've always been looking for.
I'm married to a shamanic healer, so...
Yeah, you're used to that, but I'm more on the Björn side. I experienced the journey also through the podcast and stuff you dropped into this journey. But even like right now, we also took Misha into this game with us. My PA, he was curious and we joined the room. So there were five people, and Pete, you were guiding us through the room. And what you just shared and said, Björn, you let go. And I immediately had the feeling this is perfectly fine. As I said, like, I have a hard time, very hard time, that tears come up, even in moments where I say, okay, this would be appropriate to cry. I pull back, my whole body pulls back. And what I just experienced was a physical draw from that kind of breathing where you pulled us in, and all this process started to happen. And it's very hard to share it if you don't experience it, I get it. But I would say it's a combination of like, as I experienced, of meditation, a very safe space. I mean, we talked about safe spaces at companies. I mean, we're at my office, so we created that safe space. Yeah. And then also a certain dramaturgic curve that you kind of guided through. And I've never experienced it in that way, I have to say. Like, even if someone says, yeah, go meditate and do stuff, this was, as I mentioned in the intro, one of the most intense experiences so far. So I kind of get this idea that if you tap into this journey, there is more. What, give us the brief outline. Wim Hof is a very famous breath teacher, but Björn told me when we met, okay, we are on the other side of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that it get me in the first place. I said, Michael, we got to try that. Mm. So give us the outline about this type of work you guys done together.
Sure. Yeah. So I would say when it comes to breathwork, I'd say there's two sides. So we can think left and right hand, you know. So on the left hand, we have mind-based breathwork. Mm-hmm. Okay. So mind-based breathwork would be like Wim Hof technique, would be yoga pranayamas, could be box breath, or, you know, any technique where we use our mind to control our breathing rhythm. So that's a really effective tool that we can use maybe in the morning to activate, or a relaxing breath to help us sleep at night. And it's a tool we can bring in for 2-3 minutes, and it's going to produce pretty much the exact same outcome every time. You know, I do that and then I get up and then I feel the same way pretty much, okay? So that's a really nice tool to have. One of the downsides of that is that as soon as we get up and we walk out the door, we go back to breathing the same way we've always been breathing, and in a way living the same way we've always been living, because breath is an interesting dance between we can have conscious access to breath, like we can sit here and think about our breathing, or we cannot, and we're still going to do it, you know? So it is that window into the subconscious, or as, you know, our friend Wim would say, into the autonomic nervous system and how we can tap into that. So the mind-based practice over here is the top-down approach. And they're great acute tools. So over here on the right-hand side, we have body-based breathwork or somatic-based breathwork, okay? And those tools are where we allow the mind to switch off by looping the breath or connecting the breath. And I was explaining this to you guys before, and you're like, okay. And then you feel it. And there's this experience when we connect the breath for a few minutes that the body kind of starts to find its own rhythm. Like it kind of knows what it's doing almost, you know?
Connecting, you mean this breathe in, breathe out, that this is closer together than
exactly.
Usually.
So usually when we would be breathing, we would have an inhale and then a pause and then an exhale and then maybe a slight pause. And in removing the pause at the top and the bottom, we create a consistent flow of breath moving in and out. So it doesn't have to be intense or crazy. It can be, but that's not the point, at least with what the technique we're using. The technique is just to connect the breath so that the body drops into this slightly altered state, okay? And altered states have been explored by, you know, as a shamanic tradition, all the way up to people going to the jungles to do different forms of medicine with shamans and
Or Joe Dispenza.
Joe Dispenza, exactly. Basically, what we're doing is we're switching off the conscious mind and tapping into the innate wisdom of the body, basically. And animals do this naturally, for instance. They don't have a prefrontal cortex. So, for instance, if a deer gets chased by a lion and it gets attacked, it will naturally go into a freeze state. And then it will play dead, and then the lion will put it down, and then it will, after a certain point, get up and run off. And then it will get to safety and it will shake without thinking. It's not going to think, okay, what am I going to do for breakfast? What do people judge me? It's, you know, a deer. It's going to shake the energy out and then it's going to go back. And that means that it will still have a memory of that experience, but it's not going to be, inverted commas, traumatized, or it's not going to hold that memory in its body. So that, let's say they hear a twig snap, they're not going to collapse into a freeze state again. Now, the difference with humans is when we have an experience that's overwhelming, like Bjorn, you mentioned with, let's say, your dad hitting your mom. So in that moment, as a child, I would imagine you don't have much tools to do anything about it.
No.
Okay. So what's the best survival response of the body in that moment? Is it to fight? Not going to fight the dad. You're not going to win. Probably lose connection and love. Okay. So what do we got? Maybe fawning, maybe like trying to be nice and pleasing. Okay. That can also be a strategy we develop. But the best is probably going to be freeze. So our nervous system is overwhelmed. It's too much for us to take. So we just shut down. We're like the deer, we play dead, okay? And that's well and good, okay, if we then have the safe space and the tools to then process that after and we understand what's happening. However, what often happens is, like you said, you just bottle that up and then we never talk about it again and it never comes out. And that's now later on in life, you know, 20, 30 years later, dictating how we're living, you know? It's an incomplete loop. It's a tab that's still open on the computer. So when it comes back to body-based breathwork, what we're doing is in looping the breath and tapping into this altered state, we have an opportunity to drop back into these incomplete reflexes and give them completion because we've turned off the conscious mind. Now, we can still find in that process that some mechanisms come up to avoid going into it because, you know, I'd imagine, what age were you probably when that happened?
Eight-ish.
Eight, okay, okay. So at 8 years old, you know, we're still developing for the most part. Okay. So we're still laying down some degrees of basic neural pathways, usually 0 to 3 and then 0 to 7 are the primary ones. But, you know, the mindset and the view of the world at 8 is very different to 38. You know what I mean? So let's say a guy comes in now with a shotgun and, you know, points it and says, give me all your money. Okay. Maybe that would be a traumatic experience that we would be challenged by after. But that's very unlikely to happen. And there's very few things that are actually happening on a day-to-day basis to us as grown adults that are going to impact us. However, as a child, as an 8-year-old, that can be, that can feel like the world's going to end. You know, if your dad hits your mom like that, that's like, whoa, my whole world has been shook right now. Okay. And because we're egocentric, we don't have the capacity to see outside. So there can even be an element of taking that on of like, oh, if I did something different, if that was, maybe that was my fault, you know, there could be guilt, there can be shame. Mm-hmm. And that's held in the body. Okay. And that can be impacting our actions on a day to day. So in dropping into this connected breathwork journey, we get to re-experience that moment, but we get to see it through a new lens. We get to feel those emotions and give that completion so that it no longer dictates
my behavior. So you can heal yourself by closing the tap. Because you are now you're a grown up, you can say, well, it was not my fault, it was not okay.
Bingo, yeah.
Und hier kommt die Werbung. Gleich geht's weiter mit On the Way to New Work. Bleibt dran, unser Werbepartner diese Woche ist niemand Geringeres als Sage. Für Sage durfte ich auch schon mal auf der Bühne stehen. Ein spannendes Unternehmen, solltet ihr euch immer anschauen. Aber hier geht's um eine wirklich spannende Studie, die Sage rausgebracht hat. Nämlich die HR-Trends, also quasi die Zukunft des Personalwesens, der Personalarbeit. Also alles, was man für HR in Zukunft wissen sollte. Und hier geht's um tiefgehende Einblicke in die aktuellen und zukünftigen Herausforderungen eben im HR. Beispielsweise aus der Studie hier mal ein kleiner Fact, den ich sehr spannend fand. 78% der HR-Führungskräfte glauben, dass der Einsatz von künstlicher Intelligenz bei den HR-Aufgaben in Zukunft viel Zeit einsparen könnte. Oder 79% sind überzeugt davon, dass HR-Prozesse in ihrem Unternehmen stärker automatisiert werden können, um die Effizienz zu steigern. Ich finde es deswegen spannend, weil ich auch schon Anfang des Jahres gesagt habe, das wird das Jahr der Automatisierung und KI ist dazu wichtig. Und wenn ihr da weiter einsteigen wollt in das Thema, dann solltet ihr euch unbedingt die Studie runterladen. Das Ganze findet ihr kostenlos auf Sage, geschrieben S-A-G-E, also www.sage.de/HR, S-A-G-E geschrieben. Und was muss man noch wissen? Sage hat sich zur Aufgabe gemacht, KMUs bei der Bewältigung ihrer HR-spezifischen Herausforderungen durch innovative Softwarelösungen zu unterstützen. Das heißt, diese Lösungen helfen euch dabei, Geschäftsprozesse zu vereinfachen, zu automatisieren, was eben eine viel effizientere und effektive Personalverwaltung ermöglicht. Damit habt ihr dann mehr Zeit für die wirklich wichtigen Themen, anstatt einfach nur Prozesse zu managen. Also, schaut euch das Ganze an. Hier geht es aber erstmal um HR-Trends, die Studie auf www.sage.de/HR. Und jetzt wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit dem Rest der Folge von On the Way to New Work.
But the difficulty is like talking about it, we always say it's clear. And what I have a hard time is to feel that and experience it. And what I just experienced now with you, and it felt very safe when you guided through, is that I don't even know, and you said that before, what comes up. Mm-hmm. I knew, okay, you ask us, okay, what do you want to like go on the journey? I said, like, okay, letting go. And I mean, okay, crying is kind of a letting go. So I kind of had an idea, something like I was holding onto something, but I had no idea what exactly. And this to me is the big difference between a coaching talk where you say, oh, I get it. Okay, I understand. Mm-hmm. I remember I was doing some coaching with one of our podcast guests, Dr. Miriam Pries, episode 75. One of the best episodes. And I did some coaching afterwards, couple therapy and all this stuff. And I always said, yes, I understand. And she said, Mr. Magnusson, you always say you understand. Don't say that so fast. Mm-hmm. And what I get now, the big difference between understanding and feeling, going through an experience with the body, totally different experience. And I never experienced it tapping that fast into this. I usually stumble upon it or work a week in Hoffman, but not in like an hour laying on my office floor breathing. That's the big difference. But that's quite surprising to me, I have to say.
Yeah, I can add to that. Like, I did coaching before, right? Executive coaching, everything. And while conceptually in my head, I would get all of that and how to be a better leader and all of these things, it makes a whole difference if it shifts from like understanding it in my head to like feeling it in my heart. And that is what I found about the practice most powerful. It like enables me to really like feel it, embody it. And then I can go out and actually live it and change my life. Basically, the minute after the experience, I'm able to integrate basically into what I'm doing every day. And that's the biggest power of it.
So one way to bring back Bjorn's story into this and describe how breathwork might support that kind of a situation is like when you first came to me and you listed this, you know, array of things that you wanted to change, I was like, cool, okay, great. So we've got some behaviors and strategies that are cognitively we know are not good or not ideal, okay, but yet they're happening. Okay, so what benefit are we receiving from these? Okay, well, from a nervous system perspective, he's getting some kind of escape or relief from those, okay? What would the alternative be if he didn't use those tools? Probably have to kill himself, to be honest, you know? Like, that would be the only other way out. So we're using these as a buffer to avoid the pain of feeling what is there, basically. So this is where we can judge someone's... Okay, an example I like to use is, if you saw a man walk across the street and punch a woman and take her handbag, you'd say, that's a bad man. He's bad. But if you knew that on the other side of the road, there was a guy with a shotgun pointed at his family, said, punch that woman and take her bag or I kill your family. You say, okay, fair enough. He's a good guy.
I would do the same.
So we're not advocating punching any women with handbags. No. But what I'm saying is that we can judge the behavior, but it's who has the gun pointed underneath, you know? So I would say in your case, there's these stacked layers of unmet needs and beliefs and fears that are running the show, basically, you know, that are influencing all these surface level behaviors. And we can look at the behaviors and judge them. But ultimately, once we get down to the unmet needs at the core, down in the basement, and we can flip that switch from negative to positive, all the behaviors all the way up the chain change. Mm. The thoughts change, the beliefs change. And so in our case, it was like, okay, let's go back to what are you receiving from that as an experience, like as an outlet. And then let's go there and let's work with that. And then once we close that loop, that's causing that behavior. Well, we don't need any of the things anymore, you know?
I have one question, because I shared this before in the podcast, but you don't know it because we never met before.
Sure.
I had a burnout situation last year, 2 weeks. I really meltdown, and I was two months in hospital. And what I found out there is that I'm just able to feel joy all the other feelings are on a very low level. So I'm just like a Neanderthaler. What is Neanderthaler in English? The first man.
Yeah,
on,
Neanderthal. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Fight, flight, freeze is where my conflict strategy is. Yeah. I'm not able to really do a good conflict situation, the same like you have, and so on and so on. And then the diagnosis I got, I can just say it in German because I didn't look it up in English. It's called agitierte Depression, agitative depression.
Sure.
It's if you see a continuum, they have the normal depression, which is people always feel down. Then you have the manic depression.
Where you go up, down, up, down.
Where you have up and down. And this agitative is you are always manic. So maybe we we were brothers in a former life. Everything is, I'm top, I'm doing, I can solve every problem and so on. And what I learned there in the last year then through therapy was that I have to use the full spectrum of feelings I have. Mm-hmm. To, my strategy was when I failed, I always turned the situation, well, but I learned so much and everything was there. So I didn't take the time to be sad. I didn't take the time to be angry. I always just was searching for joy. So I have to give this as a context to raise that so that you understand my question. So my way out was a psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. If I learn now remember the experience of the last hour, I ask myself, would have been the breath practice an alternative to psychotherapy? Can this be an alternative, or is it something we say probably you should do both?
I want to be very careful about making any crazy claims.
Yeah.
We do have a lab over in Bali that's beginning to work on this kind of stuff and getting some really interesting readings on EEG machines. What I will say is that including a somatic component in any journey of moving from a chronic condition is going to be beneficial in terms of getting back into the body. Because like we said, we can sit here all day and talk about, I get that, I understand that. Mm-hmm. But until we feel it and until it lands and we actually go back and complete those incomplete reflexes stored in the low brain, which is the oldest part of the brain, the lizard brain, as we like to say, until we go back and do that, we're going to just keep falling back into the same patterns to some degree, you know? And there's bridge work, like something like internal family systems, which is like parts work. That's really good. That's starting to bridge the two worlds where we can drop down with the mind as into the body. So that's a really nice modality as well. I like to mix that in a little bit with coaching and then use that to flow into the breath journey. And we can set intentions and have anchors in the mind that flows into the body that comes then through in the breathwork experience. What I would say though is every state and every emotion has a corresponding breathing rhythm. Okay. Oh. So I'll demo one or two now. So anger. So you can see my chest is moving a lot. You know, there's a lot of shoulder action. Okay. Fear. So it's like a pulsing in the diaphragm. You can kind of feel it there. And it's again, quite chest heavy. So if I don't have access to my chest to breathe, okay, then I cannot access fully the emotions of anger or fear. You know what I mean? It's not possible.
Yeah, I get it.
You know? So in order to feel those emotions, I need to have access to full dynamic breathing through my whole body. So the reason why specifically breath as one of the lowest hanging fruits can be a great component is because it starts to open up our body to have access to all the crayons in the crayon box, not just red and yellow and blue. We get green and purple and orange and all the colors. So if we want to, we can feel depression or joy or all the things in between. But we don't just get stuck in two crayons and think that that's life, because that's coloring the lens through which we see the world.
Thank you.
Why is it so hard for people to go back to something, breathing, that we initially did first place when we come to this earth? It's the first thing we do. You were born in the second. Why is it so hard for people to like come back to this?
To natural
as a
breathing.
As a practice.
I mean, we breathe
like
all the time.
But coming back as we, like, even I know it's one of the most important tools. I have books about it.
Yeah.
I just had a friend from Hinak here who's working in the Zen monastery, and we did meditation together. And he asked me, like, what kind of breathing technique do you do for your current meditation? I know it rationally. Why is it so hard to go back to that all the time? Is it because it really confronts us with what is there? What like when people come to you guys, to you, Pete, mm-hmm. they are open to that already. What happens with people, Björn, when you share it to them that you do that kind of stuff? How do they react?
They're kind of mixed feedback. So we definitely have a group of people. That's basically what we just did. Like we launched that company together, like René, Pete, and me. Mm-hmm. René is our business partner. Which we will use to kind of bring the Breathwork experience to, mm-hmm. you know, the European business startup world, so to say, right? So I just went through my network and was kind of, you know, sharing people with what I have experienced and seeing who's up for trying it and then what happens if they try it. And, you know, there's a good amount of people that is up for it and wants to give it a try. I mean, mm-hmm. part of the reason why we're here today, right? We are open to it and want to experience it. Then there's a group of people who would say, yeah, Breathwork, I heard about it, tried it already here and there, like, doesn't really work for me. Like, they've probably done some mind-based stuff, you know, and then think that it's the same that we are doing. And then, there's just a group of people who will just say, yeah, you know, my life, all good. Mm-hmm. I don't have any issues. I'm doing fine. Everything is perfect. And a part of me says, I don't buy that. Another part says, okay, fine. You know, if that's how you feel about yourself, then there's no need to change anything. Mm-hmm. But if you don't feel any pain, why would you try changing anything, right? But, you know, majority of people does feel a little bit of pain and then it's an open to mm-hmm. to trying mm-hmm. it. Coming back to your original question, like, why is it so hard? I can't really speak about the breath, but if you look at a child, like, especially newborn and even in the first couple of years, they will just express any emotion that they feel, right? Mm-hmm. They just go and mm-hmm. express it.
Yeah.
And then over time, by society and upbringing and everything, they are told that their emotions are not okay. Like, if you show that emotion, then you need to, and I'm not in like a child upbringing expert, you know, I have no kids, so I, you know, just saying that. Mm-hmm. But then if you show that emotion, you have to sit there silently for like, I don't know, 2 hours and, you know, you not receive the candies or whatever else, right? And over time, I think we kind of learn that certain emotions are simply not okay. And it's really not about blaming any parents or anything, right? But if we don't know how to deal with our emotions and to express them and then to be present while we express our emotions, then it's hard to teach our children how to do it. And then over time, children do get the message, I am not okay the way I am, and start to adjust. And then following from the way they deal with emotions, that I believe is then that might follow the way we are breathing. And that's also where that idea comes in. We are not good as we are. Mm. We need to put Absolutely. On a mask. We yep. need to be different. We need to show up in a certain way. Otherwise, we're not accepted. We are not loved. And at the very beginning, in the very, very early years, this is probably just like, again, survival, right? If I am not received, if I'm not loved by my parents, if I'm not attached to them, I will not survive because I need the attachment to get food and love and care. Mm. Otherwise, I'm going to die, right? So that might have something to do with like, why it's so difficult to get back to different breathing patterns.
Yeah, cool.
So like a way to really, because I'm conscious about also bringing in a little bit about how breath is influencing that, and specifically the technique that I'm using, which is called breath repatterning. Okay, so there's many types of body-based breathwork, and some of them involve going into a very yang state, a very high, like push, 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 you know, we need to push harder, which to be honest, our society doesn't need any more pushing. Like we've done enough of that kind of thing. And then another end is like, you know, having big groups of people in a room with not adequate support, or having online containers as well, especially during COVID.
Loud music and then...
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's basically just like, just don't do it. You know what I mean? It's like, we want to, like you guys obviously experienced like that. It's a very small group. Mm. It's a safe space. We're following this bell curve, which is like a little bit of activation and a long relaxation. And that's all we really need. We need just 5% of what we think we need. And often, you know I probably would have been drawn to the big experience in the past of like chasing that high of believing that the more emotions I let go of, the better. And this can become a bit of an addiction, you know? So people think if I don't cry for 2 hours, then it wasn't worth it kind of thing. When actually in terms of the benefit of an experience when we go through something like you guys just did, which was like just riding that edge. Like no one's overwhelmed. We're sitting here doing a podcast an hour later. I've seen sessions where people have done this, you know, other types of body-based breathwork. And afterwards they're out of it for like a few days. Like they're not themselves and they don't really know. But it was only breath. So how could that have been bad? But it's a really powerful tool when it's not wielded in the right way, we'll say. So sorry, to bring it back to my point, how that behavioral piece might show up and the desire for, let's say, love and connection. Like, let's say I grew up in a house that, you know, anger was not welcome. That was one of the natural expressions of energy from a human that was not welcome. So when the natural emotion of anger arises in my body, I go to express it. And then I'm punished and I lose my basic needs, which is connection and love. Okay. So in order to survive, my system is very intelligent. It's going to adapt in a way that I can secure my basic needs of connection and love. So what's it going to do? Next time anger comes up, okay, and you can hear, there's a hole in the throat that my system, my nervous system will start to create so that when anger comes up, it's like a stopgap. You're not getting out of here, okay? So in holding that, I maintain my basic needs, okay? Now, how that starts to show up over time, though, is I hold my throat for the, inverted commas, bad emotions, but also for the good ones. So I find it very hard to express myself and to speak up and to be heard, as well as also numbing the anger or rage or anything, any of the inverted commas bad ones that might come up. Now, how that shows up in the breathwork journey, which is really interesting, is that when someone lies down and starts to loop the breath, we start to see some of the most habitual patterns in the body, subconscious patterns, come to the surface. So after a few minutes, we'll start to see a hold starting to come through in the throat, and you'll hear it. It'll all sound like, and that's just how someone will breathe, and they won't even notice it, okay? But over time, that will start to build up into like really maybe bad cramping, like people's hands can get all weird and stuff. And, you know, basically what that's doing is their system has learned a way of suppressing that sound and that emotion so that, because it's not safe. So what I would do in a journey then is I'd come in and I'd, through different tools, support them to start releasing the throat and the neck and getting movement back through that space and sound through that space. And maybe initially they find, you know, 20% more sound than they had, and then they start to build it up. And then as we open the throat space more, probably all those times that they didn't express that anger that really wanted to come through gets to come up and out.
Mm.
So then we have this phase where they move through those past experiences they didn't get to complete. And then at that point, they regain both sides of the coin. They get the ability to express anger if they choose. It's not like they're going to start screaming in Aldi, you know what I mean? But if they wanted to express anger, they can, okay? Which can be really helpful sometimes if we're in a life or death situation. And they also get access to all the inverted commas good stuff as well, which is full expression of their voice, speaking up, speaking what's true, what's right, setting boundaries, these things that maybe get shut down or we don't feel are available because we don't have access to that space because our system has been conditioned to habitually close the throat.
Let's switch a bit to the business model.
So, please.
I would love to go on this conversation for hours, but we
last question, because it relates to the business model. So this is also why you need a guide to guide you through, because this is definitely something different in other breathing techniques because you were needed in that process. And I guess that relates to the business model.
So we can't see our own blind spots. You know, I'm sitting here breathing, but I'm not aware of how I am or am, or where breath is and isn't moving. So it takes someone who's trained in reading how breath moves through the pelvic floor, the rib cage, and the throat in order to see where they could find more ease and flow and support them then through that. And there's something else as well about being held in presence by another human. It's almost like there's a childlike quality to it of being able to fully surrender, which is hard to do in a Zoom call, really, let's be honest. You know, so that's kind of one of the key differences.
And now, Michael, sorry,
it's fine. So if I'm a listener to our podcast, I'm now so interested in working with you. How can I get in connection with you? What kind of products do you offer? You mentioned you do retreats. How do you want to scale your business? Because you said you reach the European startup community, which is big. How do you go on? What's your business model? How do you go on to let it grow?
You stand at the top of the mountain and go, wee, wee, wee.
Okay. So we close the loop. Yeah, cool. There
you go. Do you want to talk us?
Okay. Let me just start. So we have like funded the company, Breathwork Breakthroughs. I think for now, like, we are offering basically three things. Like, one is obviously one-on-one sessions that you can either book through like Renee or through Pete, and hopefully very soon through some other practitioners that we are kind of getting on board. Second thing is we're offering retreats, you know, different kind of like purposes, but always like kind of circled around breathwork, obviously. And then the third part that we are exploring, and what's like the first time we've redone it now, is like we're offering startups a chance to, you know, take on our services early on. And since, you know, cash is always a big constraint in startups, obviously, we also like taking shares as part of the compensation. That's actually something that I'm quite passionate about. Like, while these retreats are just great, like coming together in the group of like, you know, typically very strong like personalities, like doesn't matter if men or women, but all like kind of trained to not show emotions and to, you know, put on the mask and play that game. Then you come together in a circle, breathing and expressing emotion. That's already very powerful. And I mean, I'm the biggest fan of what can happen in the one-on-one sessions. That's all great. But then if we speak about, okay, how can we maybe create companies that, let's say, really, really create a work environment that actually works and that like brings people some joy and prevents burnouts and all these type of things. I do believe it always starts with the founders. And speaking from my experience, I did my best. And at the same time, I did not have the tools and I did not have the awareness to actually implement something like that in my companies. And we did have burnouts and we did have situations I would have loved to prevent. And, you know, most even like my own situation that I got into, you know. So if we offer our services to startups through like a share deal, basically, we can, you know, help shaping a new environment. And like in 5 years, some of these companies might be quite big and might run a different way of how to deal with their people. And we're not at a point where we kind of go into organizational design and like things that are covered by experts and by executive coaches and stuff. We just, you know, making sure that the founders are not stressed and centered and balanced while going through probably at least professionally most difficult times of their life. And that will then set the basis on which a healthy culture can grow, because you could have done everything in my company. I was just way above my capacity and over my limits and stressed. And that's while we had good intention and efforts and we spent tons of money on executive coaching in the end, it was never really, really translated to a sustainable culture and stuff, you know? So anyways, coming back to the company, so there's these three, let's say, main areas of business. And we've just started the business, you know, reaching out to network, reaching out to people, building a bit of brand awareness, and then, offering more of what we're already doing. Mm. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I suppose the difference between those is like the one-on-one experience is very personal and very deep, and in an enclosed space with just a practitioner, there tends to be like a deeper level of, I suppose, depth that can come mm-hmm. through, you know, a deeper level of the basement that we can reach, because there's less worrying of like, oh, what will they think if I make some noise, or, you know, it's kind of like, particularly in the early stages, it can be really nice to experience some one-on-one. And you get that hands-on support all the way through. The retreat space is really interesting because we had our first retreat there about a month ago. And it was interesting to notice everyone coming in the beginning and kind of shake hands. Oh, I'm this businessman. I have that company. I have that business partner, you know. And then after like a day, they were like, everyone was dropped in and it was just authentic and real. The masks were off. Mm. And they were people who like didn't really know each other necessarily before, but there was like a deeper connection mm-hmm. created, like a community almost. Okay. Yeah. And so we're kind of looking at this going, like we have a potentially like first one with C-levels of a company as well, where we get the top level people to come in who, if they can go into these journeys like you guys did earlier and share and go through some processes and experiences together for 3-4 days in what I would call a zone of new possibility, mm-hmm. where we get out of the old environment and we get into a new place where there's a blank canvas and we can basically recreate ourselves and our relationships. Like with that as a foundation, you spend 4 or 5 days with your team in a retreat environment and you come back into the company with that energy. Mm-hmm. What happens when we've let go of those fears that were driving the budget plan or the lack of communication that was impacting how we were working with the team and the staff? You know, it's like when we can resolve those deeper issues, what happens? It's an interesting question.
You got me.
Yeah.
So I mentioned it before, I will do such a retreat. And I will visit you in Berlin for one-on-one you got me. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, same here. I have restraints in the coming months for going to Berlin, but we got to talk about that. It's we did that for 1 hour and this hour was over in no time. Mm-hmm. You just experienced now the other side. This was a podcast full hour.
Wow. Yeah.
It's over in no time. It's crazy. Huh? And we could go on for at least another hour, but I think
we can do this at another time.
Anything to get another session out of us. Yeah.
Thank you. I love that. And there is one very important question that we connect the beginning of the podcast to the end when we ask you, how did you become the person that you are? So the question that we want to know from you now is, where do you want to go?
Personally, for me, it's like, you know, staying on the journey, on like feeling everything that is there while staying like centered and balanced. And as I am progressing on my own journey and way, kind of bringing it to my own life, but also sharing with, you know, people what I'm experiencing and just bringing that to the rest of the world while staying conscious that, you know, it's a process and I am on my very own way, but just staying there. And that is for me, really, what I said before, this like feeling everything that is there and allowing all of that and not fearing the fear, so to say, that's the ultimate freedom. And that's what I've always been looking for. So I just continue on that journey, integrating it more and more and more, even in those moments that still trigger me and that are still difficult to handle. And there's still stuff I don't want to feel, but coming back to that place and allowing it and then living that ultimate freedom and not getting back to finding it in money or status or, you know, a certain way I define my body or whatsoever. So that's where I want to go. And then if that on the way leads to some business success, I'll be very happy about that.
For me, there's a moment when, and I've experienced it a couple of times, when somebody, everything aligns where they've been ready and they're willing to step in and to feel a deeper part of themselves and to see them emerge on the other side, more truly who they are, a more whole version of themselves. And I've done a lot of things already in my life, but for me, that's one of the most touching moments. So I want to create the opportunity for more people to have that experience and to step through that door as they're ready. And for me personally, then I think just create more moments that take my breath away and remind me of the joy and the finiteness of being here.
Word.
Thank you guys for breathing with us.
Let's close with a deep breathe.
Let's do it.
Do you want to lead this exercise?
I can do that. All right. If you're listening at home, you can join us. We're going to take a nice big inhale through the nose and let it go to the side. Let the shoulders drop. And maybe one more, just for good luck. Full inhale. And let it go.